exercise no direct control. We simply cannot rely on giving orders, even when we are dealing with employees or children. To get what we want, we are compelled to negotiate. More slowly in some places, more rapidly in others, the pyramids of power are shifting into networks of negotiation. This quiet revolution, which accompanies the better-known knowledge revolution, could well be called the negotiation revolution. We began the first edition of Getting to Yes with the sentence, "Like it or not, you are a negotiator." Back then, for many listeners, that was an eye-opener. Now, it has become an acknowledged reality. Back then, the term negotiation was more likely to be associated with specialized activities, such as labor talks, closing a sale, or perhaps international diplomacy. Now, almost all of us recognize that we negotiate in an informal sense with just about everyone we meet from morning to night. A generation ago, the term negotiation also had an adversarial connotation. In contemplating a negotiation, the common question in people's minds was, who is going to win and who is going to lose? To reach an agreement, someone had to give in. It was not a pleasant prospect. The idea that both sides could benefit, that both could win, was foreign to many of us. Now it is increasingly recognized that there are cooperative ways of negotiating our differences, and that even if a win-win solution cannot be found, a wise agreement can still often be reached that is better for both sides than the alternative. When we were writing Getting to Yes, very few courses taught negotiation. Now, learning to negotiate well is accepted as a core competence, with many courses offered in law schools, business schools, schools of government, and even in quite a few primary, elementary, and high schools. In short, the negotiation revolution is now in full sway around the world, and we take heart that the common sense tenets of principal negotiation have spread far and wide to good effect. The work ahead. Still, while progress has been considerable, the work is far from done. Indeed, at no time in the last three decades can we recall a greater need for negotiation based on a joint search for mutual gains and legitimate standards. A quick survey of the news on almost any day reveals the compelling need for a better way to deal with differences. How many people, organizations, and nations are stubbornly bargaining over positions? How much destructive escalation results in bitter family feuds, endless lawsuits, and wars without end? For lack of a good process, how many opportunities are being lost to find solutions that are better for both sides? Conflict remains, as we have noted, a growth industry. Indeed, the advent of the negotiation revolution has brought more conflict, not less. Hierarchies tend to bottle up conflict, which comes out into the open as hierarchies give way to networks. Democracies surface rather than suppress conflict, which is why democracies often seem so quarrelsome and turbulent when compared with more authoritarian societies. The goal cannot and should not be to eliminate conflict. Conflict is an inevitable and useful part of life. It often leads to change and generates insight. Few injustices are addressed without serious conflict. In the form of business competition, conflict helps create prosperity. And it lies at the heart of the democratic process, where the best decisions result not from a superficial consensus, but from exploring different points of view and searching for creative solutions. Strange as it may seem, the world needs more conflict, not less. The challenge is not to eliminate conflict, but to transform it. It is to change the way we deal with our differences, from destructive, adversarial battling to hard-headed, side-by-side problem-solving. We should not underestimate the difficulty of this task, yet no task is more urgent in the world today. We are living in an age that future anthropologists might look back on and call the first